This is Radio Boston. I'm Simone Rios in for Tiziana Deering. Today, we're talking about equal pay. Here's something you may be familiar with, but always bears repeating. In Massachusetts, women earn just 83 cents on the dollar compared to men. And that ratio can be far worse for women of color, 58 cents for black women and 50 cents for Latinas. That's according to the Mass Office of Economic Empowerment. You may have heard about Equal Pay Day, the date that symbolizes how far into the year women have to work to make what men made the previous year. The U.S. reached Equal Pay Day last month, but a group in Greater Boston says our Pay Equity Day comes more than a month later. That day is today. Why does this wage gap persist? And what can be done about it in the workplace? Joining us now are two experts. Kim Borman heads the Boston Women's Workforce Council that calculated our local Equal Pay Day. Also here is Hannah Riley Bowles. She's the co-director of the Women in Public Policy program at Harvard Kennedy School and an expert in pay equity negotiations. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Kim, let's start with you. Your group is made up of local business folks as well as the city of Boston. The state says women make 83 cents on the dollar, but you say it's actually closer to 70 cents, right? Why the difference?
The difference has to do with the data that's collected. So the state is using census data, which is it's when you call somebody on the phone and you ask them, what are you earning? And people have to remember that. Our data from our members comes right off their payroll systems. So we think it's extremely accurate. And when we do the analysis of our 250 plus employers, it comes to 30 cents or 70 cents on the dollar is what women on average earn versus men.
So you're using real survey data as opposed to a more generalized data coming from the census. If you look back in recent years, how has this wage gap changed? Is it getting bigger or smaller?
So we do an analysis every 2 years of our compact signers, and actually it stayed the same as it did in 2019. And people ask me, are you disappointed? And of course I'm disappointed, but there were labor economists who thought because there were so many women leaving from the lower salaried jobs that we were going to actually see an artificial narrowing of the wage gap. We did not see that in our data. We saw the same gap. We also saw that businesses increased salaries overall for all employees by 12%. So our employers in Boston were trying very, very hard to keep their workforces intact, which is a good thing.
Okay, Hannah, let's turn to you. What are women talking about? What women are we really talking about? Because not all women earn less than men for the same job. Break down the wage gap as you see it.
Well, in general, there are a couple of key factors that contribute to the calculation of the gender wage gap. So the gender wage gap is comparing earnings of male and female full-time workers. It is not, which is really important, it's not comparing men and women in the exact same job. So what it is in part, one big factor or one big explanatory factor in the gender wage gap is that men and women are in different occupations. And there tends to be what's called a gender segregation of occupations. And that is that there are certain occupations that are dominated by women, some dominated by men. And typically, or on average, those dominated by men tend to be higher paid than those dominated by women. But there's another really important factor is that even if you look within certain occupations, a classic example is the law, you might have a man and a woman who is a lawyer, but the law profession has lots of variation, right? And so one of the second big contributor, and this is work of by Claudia Golden has really highlighted this, and she's got a new book, just a little bit of a preview of the answer, called Career and Family. But this second factor, in addition to the gender segregation of labor, is the time greediness of work. And so if you look at a profession like the law, those lawyers who are working 80 or 100-hour weeks are typically earning more than half of those lawyers who are working 40 or 50-hour weeks. And that is in some professions – there's a really what she calls a kind of hockey puck payoff and a payoff to extreme workforce commitment. And due to the gender division of household labor, caregiving labor, unpaid labor, men are more likely than women to go into those areas of work that reward extreme work commitment.
I see. So one question I had is how much of this has to do with the ability to negotiate for salaries? There's this sense that maybe men are more willing to drive a harder bargain before they get hired.
Okay, that's a great question. There's a lot of discussion about gender and pay negotiations. I think one thing that's really important to point out is that it's really only a small sliver of the overall gender wage gap that could be attributed to things like discrimination or salary negotiations.
Okay.
I think salary negotiations are good to do, particularly in spaces where that's normative. But what's really important also is that there's an emphasis on, you know, skilling up women and giving them more confidence, when actually the best evidence shows that the gender differences and the propensity to negotiate actually have to do with the fact that men and women get different reactions when they attempt to negotiate. And women tend to run into more social resistance and resistance to what they're asking for. I actually think it's more important, and maybe we can talk more about this, than to be thinking about negotiating pay, maybe thinking about negotiating the trajectory of your career and remaining, employed continuously and in a kind of professionally advancing or at least meaningful way over the course of your career. Although gender wage gap compares full-time and full-time workers, if you really look at comparisons where you look at kind of what are men and women earning overall and you conclude part-time work, the numbers are even more dramatic.
I see.
So where the even bigger gaps occur when women are reducing their hours or stepping outside of the workforce.
Okay. One thing I want to ask is if you're to control these numbers for things like experience and seniority, you brought the number of hours worked. How does the wage gap scenario change when you introduce some of these controls?
Okay, yeah. So if you start then going down and you control for what we call like human capital, like the degree of education somebody has, the number of years of experience, and then you're controlling for the job that they're in, and then very specifically the job that they're in terms of like whether you're like the type of lawyer that you are, the gender wage gap shrinks substantially. The other thing, really important thing to be aware of is that the gender wage gap is not spread like evenly like peanut butter through the economy, right? There are particular places where larger gaps tend to occur, and those tend to be places where there's more subjectivity or ambiguity in compensation standards, or where there are stars who can claim kind of extra payoff by virtue of their star status.
So, for example, academia?
Academia, surgeons, some types of lawyers, absolutely.
Okay. Kim Borman, I want to turn back to you. So, according to the state, Black and Latina women make just 58 cents and 50 cents, respectively, relative to men of all races. So I imagine that just really drags down the numbers of what women make relative to men. Should we really be talking about a racial pay gap here?
Well, we do in our analysis look at it by gender, and then we look at it also by race. So it includes both genders and then gender and racial wage gap. And you can see that report on our website. But to go back to what Hannah's saying is our information is, when you're looking for equal pay for equal work, we call that sort of horizontal measurement. And that has been the law since 1963. So you would hope that people are within these bands. And we know because of 2018, when MEPA was passed, that in Massachusetts, employers tend to do that or they get fined. What we're really measuring is this advancement. And that's what Hannah's talking about, is if women are not, and especially women of color, if they are not promoted at the same rates as men, you are going to see a large gap because you just don't have enough women in these higher salaries. And we think that's really what's happening with people of color, is they're not being considered for promotion and being advanced.
Okay. I want to bring in a little of the nuance in your statistics in this conversation, like age, for example. So there's a report from Pew Research last month saying that on average, young women in some cities actually earn more than men. Not Boston, we should note, but Barnstable here in Massachusetts. These are women under 30, we should note. What should we make of that?
Well, that goes back to really what Hannah's saying, is that people start off often at the same salary rate, but something happens as they progress, and they're not getting advanced at the same rate. There was a study that just came out from the University of Berkeley that you might have saw, Hannah, that dealt with, it's called, not the wage gap, but the, it was called the responsibility gap. Mm-hmm. And as women progress in their career, for some reason, they're not getting the plum jobs or projects. They're not getting more people to manage. So then when you get to what you think is a very objective evaluation process, and people say, well, gosh, she's only managing 10 people and he's managing 25. Well, how did that come about? I mean, that's what's got to be looked at. And I think that's really to Hannah's point, is that there's something going on here in these intervening years between from when you start and when you finish your career.
So the jury's out. We're still trying to figure out what the root cause is. Kim, your team at the Boston Women's Workforce Council has this new pay gap calculator. Tell us about how this works and how people might use it in their own workplace.
Well, what we're encouraging employers to do is to go to wagegapcalculator.org and really put in the information. It's aggregated information. It's all confidential because it'll be done on your desktop. And it allows you to see if you have a gender wage gap, if you have a racial wage gap, if you have a gender and racial wage gap. And the results page will compare your numbers versus the numbers that we produced from our snapshot of the community through our 2021 data.
Okay. What I'd like to do now is talk a little bit beyond gender, because pay gaps exist on many different fronts. Class, for example, is tied to education. Everybody knows that the more degrees you have, the more you're likely to be paid. What other kinds of pay inequities are we facing, Hannah Riley Bowles?
Well, one thing that I'd like to highlight, going back to Kim's point, is that, you know, that we have a lot of conversation about women encountering resistance when they attempt to negotiate for higher pay. There's a wonderful study by a group, Hernandez et al., that showed that Black men face similar resistance when they attempt to negotiate for higher pay. So race is clearly a very important factor. You know, you definitely mentioned class. There's, you know, a lot of research on whether you've gone to an elite institution and the signaling and the networking that provides. Being a parent is another really important factor. And the degree to which whether you signal that you want to be a parent and an active parent. And the implications of that can actually be different for men and for women. Men also can face a kind of not man enough backlash for attempting to be engaged in family-friendly work practices and to be available to their kids. And so that can be a kind of stigmatized identity. When you were talking, Kim, about what happens in the age group from early career to later career, one of those things is kids.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
And so, yeah.
And people make assumptions for you. Mm-hmm. I remember earlier in my advertising career, after I had my second child, someone decided, oh, it would be so much easier for her to be on this account than that account because, you know, it's a direct flight there. Well, it really wasn't. It was so much harder because that direct flight was always late. But someone else was making that decision for me based on what they thought I wanted. And you need to be talking to your employees and find out what works for them.
I wanted to ask, what can folks do? What can women do? What can anybody who's facing this kind of gap do when they find out that it happens?
They talk to their employers and they talk to their HR people. And right now, let's face it, employees have a lot of leverage because there aren't a lot of them out there right now. So it's the time to really go in and say, hey, I let's talk about this. There's something I think's wrong.
Amen. That was Hannah Riley Bowles, co-director of the Women and Public Policy Program at Harvard Kennedy School. Also with us was Kim Borman, executive director of the Boston Women's Workforce Council. Thank you both.